A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 194. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Frankenstein. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a 75-minute black-and-white version of Frankenstein. It's a 1968 adaptation of the novel, and it was part of an ITV anthology series that included lots of adaptations. That series was called Mystery and Imagination.
Yes, that's right. An interesting show, but only about a handful of episodes have survived from the 60s. This episode we've been looking at comes from the fourth series, as we'll find out in a while. This actually had five series, this programme. And here we have an episode from the fourth series, one of the few to survive. And it's a return for us to Frankenstein. We have talked about a more modern version of Frankenstein in the past. And here we are with a hopefully suitably gothic and chilling show to discuss for our Halloween-timed episodes, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. This goes, as we'll get into later, a little more into the approach that the book took and the story of the original novel. And interestingly, it has Ian Holm in a double role. Holm plays both Dr. Victor Frankenstein and the monster he creates, which is a little unusual and a very interesting feature of this production.
Yeah, something quite exciting about this. So we will be talking about that as we go along.
Oh, absolutely. So let's get into the setup of this a little bit. Victor Frankenstein is at university in Heidelberg to study the natural sciences, and his own research is leading him away from conventional medicine, or to something that includes parts of conventional medicine and also parts of ancient mysticism and things like that.
Yes, and we all sort of know where this is headed. We know he's going to take the knowledge of anatomy that he's gaining in the lecture theatres and all these other bits and pieces that he's going to put together, and he is going to get the idea that he can create life himself. And in traditional fashion, he withdraws from his lectures to his rooms and with some accomplices sets about creating the creature that will plague him for the rest of his life, and certainly for the rest of this this production, Brian.
Yes, that's right. The characters involved, of course, we have Frankenstein himself, played by Ian Holm, who is this young and brilliant, but really rather unpredictable student of anatomy and natural philosophy, and is getting into all of these philosophical ideas and ideas of how life works, and of course leading towards the idea of creating life himself. Ian Holm now may be best known for playing Bilbo Baggins in Lord of the Rings, in the big theatrical films directed by Peter Jackson. He has also been in many films and many productions over the years. He's really very well known, and this, of course, was much earlier in his career, in the late 60s.
And as you say, we've got his young, brilliant, and to begin with, very decisive student who clearly knows what he wants to do. But of course, when he succeeds in this one great mission, it will change him quite dramatically. And he becomes, I think, a much more troubled and less decisive character as a result, because he has brought into existence the creature, scarred, tormented, who struggles to come to terms with his existence and with the fact that his own creator will basically reject him. And as we've said, very interestingly in this production, we have Ian Holm playing both roles. We'll talk a little bit about the makeup and the editing that required as we go on. But it's the very interesting idea at the heart of this production.
Yes, that's right. We also have Professor Kremp, Victor's brilliant and respected tutor, played by Richard Vernon, who we know from lots of different things. Here on British Invaders, we of course remember him as Slarty Bartfast in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy on television and radio. And we also saw him in The Guardians quite recently, and he's been in many different things. Very good actor, always reliable in whatever we see him in.
Yes, and it is nice to see him here. He's in this very sort of authority figure role of the lecturer, but who also takes an interest in Victor and is, of course, I suppose, dismayed when the young Victor Frankenstein appears to go off the rails. A couple of other characters to mention who are important. They are from the original story itself. We have Victor's fiancée Elizabeth, played by Sarah Bedell. Her concerns about Victor's seclusion and his apparent withdrawal from his studies lead her to travel to Heidelberg to try and find out what's gone wrong with him. And then we also have Victor's best friend, Henry Clerval, played by Neil Stacey, who's another one of the voices of reason who will try and lead Victor back to normal society. And you know the story, you know the book, you know the various interpretations. You can probably imagine that that's not going to end terribly well.
Yes, Clerval is quite an important character in the novel, and he's one that sometimes gets lost along the way in different takes on Frankenstein. It's nice to see him played and used as an important character for his relationship with Victor, as was the case in the novel. We should talk a little bit more about the story as it's setting up. The creation of the creature in this version does follow some of the tropes we've seen in the movies with lightning and so on. It wasn't so much that they changed how the creature was created from the novel, as that the novel was very light and sketchy on detail about how the creature was created. It just sort of happened in the novel, and it wasn't really specified how. Although there were references to him seeing lightning earlier and getting ideas, that sort of thing. In this, they use the lightning and the bandages, so something a little bit like what we've seen in other films. But the creature that is created is much more like the one from the novel. He is an intelligent being, someone who has some philosophy to him. He can speak, he can reason, he questions his existence and how he was created.
That's right, yes, an interesting creature. And as we say, we do have some makeup on Ian Holm. So he has a scarred face. He has what we could, I suppose, almost regard as the typical scar running across his forehead. And they have raised his hairline and the top of his head slightly by the looks of it. So it does, perhaps it does nod towards Jack Pierce's famous Universal makeup for Boris Karloff, although, as we say, this is a much different interpretation of the creature.
Yeah, they didn't quite go to him having bolts in his neck or anything like that, but they did do some things to make him seem sort of hideous and not quite human, which is very much how he was described in the book. It just didn't have all of those details.
And as we've suggested already, once Frankenstein has created the creature, he is repulsed by it, and he allows it to escape and disappear into the night. And in what is to follow, Frankenstein really makes no attempt to control the creature or to capture it at all. Of course, as the creature gains more knowledge, its anger grows, and its sense of disappointment with its creator and the fact that Frankenstein will have nothing to do with it So much so that he will eventually return to Frankenstein. And again, you probably know from the original book that he makes a very terrible demand upon Frankenstein, which we'll talk about a bit more in our next episode.
That's right. And it really, in terms of story, sticks quite closely to Mary Shelley's original novel. It simplifies things a little bit because that novel is somewhat convoluted in certain ways. But a lot of it is there, and that's nice.
What do they say, Fritz? Are they envious of my capacity for learning? Chemistry, mathematics, physiology?
Professors say so. I've heard them say you may be a great man of science one day.
One day. A great man of science, indeed. My dear Fritz, the ancient teachers of science promised the impossible and performed nothing. But there are other men. Men who are indeed born to perform miracles. Miracles, Fritz! And I am one of those new men. I know I am. That is why I work. Work.
Yes, but to what end, sir?
To what end? Why, the end toward which all scientific labor is ultimately directed, Fritz, to find the very source of life.
So that will bring us, I guess, to talking about some of our production notes. And perhaps unusually for recent episodes, we've got quite a lot of notes about only a few surviving episodes, Brian.
Yes, that's right. In the early 1960s into the mid-60s, series of television plays with supernatural themes and adaptations of horror stories and ghost stories, those types of things were quite popular. Of course, many of them don't survive, but they were quite popular and a number of things were being done. ABC, which was one of the ITV companies at the time, had some success with a series called Hour of Mystery, and then also another series, Armchair Mystery Theater. So there were a number of these kinds of things, and while they were called mystery, they often went in supernatural directions.
And they looked to carry on with this supernatural direction by turning to a producer called Jonathan Alwyn and a story editor, Terence Feely, for a new series which was to be called Mystery and Imagination. Now, Alwyn had directed some episodes of The Avengers, and of course he'd also been a director on ABC's Armchair Theatre series. And likewise, Feely had written episodes of The Avengers and in fact had been story editor on Armchair Theatre. So they had worked together already. And that was the team that ABC sort of handed this new project to.
That's right. And in the style that was common at the time, they turned to a number of classic works and classic writers to find things to adapt. So they looked at the works of M.R. James and Sheridan Le Fanu, Robert Louis Stevenson, Charles Dickens, Henry James, and others to find stories they could use to adapt for this. And they also decided to add a linking character, this character called Richard Beckett, who would appear in each story and give the audience a central figure, a central character to follow through all of these different stories from classic authors, which is a little bit unusual to sort of do the two things, to add that linking character to the older stories.
Yes, and they'd come up with 13 stories for the first two series, which would run in 1966. And at that time, they were running as one-hour episodes. This production we've been looking at is a 75-minute. So obviously their time slot expanded later on. But initially, one-hour episodes. The first series included The Fall of the House of Usher by Edgar Allan Poe, and that one, I believe, does survive. And it also included adaptations of the tractate Midoth and Lost Hearts, which you'll probably recognise both as stories by M.R. James. In fact, we've had a Mark Gatiss adaptation of the tractate Midoth on our screens last Christmas,
So that's been redone recently. Unfortunately, those two versions from this series, they don't survive.
Yes, quite a bit of this series does not survive, actually. The second series had Room 13 by M.R. James and actually an adaptation of Carmilla by Sheridan Lefanu, among other things. So there were some interesting stories being used there. It was successful enough to get a third series in 1968, but by that time they dropped this recurring Beckett character that they had added in. And six episodes, including Casting the Runes, M.R. James, and Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, were included there as well.
Okay, then we get a slight reorganization of the ITV regions in 1968, and the production of this particular show, Mystery and Imagination, moves from ABC to the new Thames television network. And as such, we also get a new producer. Reginald Collins takes over from Jonathan Alwyn as the producer. And we get this fourth series of three episodes. And they were Uncle Silas by Sheridan Lefanu again. Dracula, an interesting sounding production because it had Denham Elliott as the Count. And then it also had this particular Frankenstein, which we've been talking about. So as you say, just the three in the fourth series, but three quite heavy hitting sounding productions, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
So for this one, for Frankenstein, we've got the script adapted by Robert Muller and the episode directed by a Polish director called Wojtek Roman, who again came from that same stable of television producers, directors and writers who'd worked on The Avengers and Armchair Theatre. Particular shows, I think they obviously shared a sort of common group of people who were working together.
Yes, a group of people who were sort of very much with the ITV network and the commercial side of things at the time. So the action in Frankenstein was limited to Heidelberg without the large variety of locations that are in Mary Shelley's novel, in particular the climactic scenes in the Arctic were changed because of cost reasons, of course. They couldn't do such a broad set of locations. It was broadcast on November 11th, 1968. It received some good reviews, in particular for Ian Holm's performance or performances. And Mystery and Imagination would run for one more series of three plays, including Freddie Jones playing Sweeney Todd, but the ratings dropped at that point, and the series finished up, and the final episodes were broadcast in early 1970.
Okay, so that's the background to this series. Availability we should talk about. As ever in Region 2, we are fortunate because in 2010, we got a network DVD release on four discs, which includes all the six episodes from the fourth and fifth series, including Frankenstein, obviously, and that rather interesting sounding Dracula with Denham Elliott. And it contains the two other surviving episodes, which are both from series one. That's Fall of the House of Usher and a story called The Open Door, which was originally written by Mrs. Oliphant. I don't know much about that one, but sounds interesting. It also includes this only surviving clips of the M.R. James adaptation they did of Cast in the Ruins. And you may remember that when we did talk about a 70s version of that story, that we did reference back to the 60s version and the fact that it didn't survive.
Yes, there are a few clips of that, but not many. It gives you a bit of an idea of the look of it, but not much more than that.
Okay, and this four-disc set comes with a very extensive notes booklet with episode guides written by the quite well-known TV historian Andrew Pixley. And as ever, I'm indebted to his booklet because that's where we got most of the background information about Mystery and Imagination and its place in 1960s television. And that package currently on Amazon for £24 here in the UK. Not as available on any of the rental sites as far as we can see. So just over here in Region 2, your only option really is this DVD set.
Yes, that's really the option for getting this, is that DVD set. In Region 1, there is no release. The Region 2 DVD set is available as an import on Amazon.com for about $75 or a little more. So again, probably better off just ordering from amazon.co.uk. But it's great to have the release that we do have from Network.
Yes, it is. Nothing on YouTube. There are a couple of clips and there is a trailer for the DVD release from Network DVD, which includes some clips from Frankenstein. So that might be worth watching to give you a taster. But none of the episodes are up there. So I guess that will wrap us up for part one. We're coming back next time to talk a bit more about this version of Frankenstein, and in particular we'll talk about Holmes' performance and this sort of dual role, which is an interesting feature.
And we'll talk a little bit more about how this compares to the original novel and so on. And of course we'll share some of our own views about the production and the DVD set.
Okay, so lots to talk about next time when we come back.
Absolutely. You can reach us at BritishInvaders.com, and you can find us at TheGeekCultureNetwork.com. We are members of the Geek Culture Network. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there.
You can also find us on VogNetwork.com, which is the home of the Voice of Geeks internet streaming radio for all of your geek listening needs, really. Several shows go out there. We're proud to be part of that setup.
Yes, absolutely. And they have a very participatory type of arrangement there. So you can have some nice interactive things there. And then, of course, our discussions in our Facebook group. So a couple of nice things for interacting with listeners and with us. So thank you for listening. And this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much for being with us, and we hope to have you next time. And until then, it's Eamon in England also signing off.